Turning our attention now to South Africa's history as we reflect on Heritage Day today, and I couldn't think of a more fitting guest to feature here on Weekend Breakfast than Dr. Reuben Richards. Who's Dr. Reuben Richards, you may ask? Well, from clothing factory worker to Deputy Director General of the Scorpions and Executive Secretary of the Human Rights Violations Committee of the TRC, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, Dr. Reuben Richards has completed 4 degrees in 3 countries, ending with a PhD in Old Testament studies. He's the author of Bastards or Humans, The Unspoken Heritage of Colored People, and the book's been described as a brave endeavor in a country that only knows racism and the bastardization of colored identity and its indigenous Khoisan heritage. It's a story that undoes the limiting view of South Africa's narrative as a struggle between white and black. Reuben, good morning. Thanks for joining us on this public holiday. How are you?
Good morning, Amy, and good morning to your listeners. I'm very well, thank you.
Tell us about the book, first of all, being described as a brave endeavor in a country that only knows racism and undoes the limiting view of South Africa's narrative as a struggle between black and white. How does the book do that, Reuben?
Amy, I think the reviewer probably picks up on the polarity of the arguments in South Africa around identity, which is either white or black. You know, there's a brown middle somewhere. And it's those polarities that have contesting ideological battles for the narrative of our past. So then what is the narrative of our past? And if you look at it soberly, it's kind of brown or brownish or something like that. If you want to just talk in color coding terms, it becomes more emotional when you start putting labels to the color, and that's probably part of the, I suppose, the bravery, because it's a minefield. You know, some people don't. People are very, very sensitive about what label is used to describe them. This group that I focus on is a group that I come from. When I look in the mirror, I see a Cape colored born in 1960 in South Africa. And that identity was thrust upon me long before I was born. And so I was born into this crucible. And at some point in one's life, you got to make sense about who you are, where you come from, and then hopefully helps you to map out where you're going to. And that in itself is either a brave task or an insane task. I don't know which one is more relevant. But we don't often look in the mirror, you know, because we get a bit scared what we see. So maybe that's what the reviewer is referring to. I don't know.
And Reuben, I'm assuming in writing these books that you, obviously it's very historical and tracking the heritage of South African people and colored people, but I'm assuming it's also attempting to instill a sense of pride in who you are and where you've come from.
No, absolutely. You know, the pride comes with access to a different set of information. So, you know, I often describe the book as a set of GPS coordinates to help you navigate to find your position in life. So while the focus, let me just do one sort of corrective, while the focus and entry point to the narrative is coloredness or my identity, it's not solely about coloredness. It's about understanding who I am in the broader context of who else is in the room. And there are many people in the room. And one has to acknowledge that diversity, and that's what Heritage Day, of course, is all about. It's trying to capture that diversity. But inside of that is a story of pain, trauma, exclusion, and marginalization. And I just so happen to emerge from a group like that, a group that has been written out of the narrative. You will not find our stories in the mainstream of history, for example. And so I've compiled a number of stories that make sense to me, that is from our history, but for some reason, the historians have just not paid attention to it. And when I tell these stories to my audiences, you know, suddenly their chests go bigger and they sit up straighter and they feel more proud of themselves. And then that's really the purpose, is for people to feel a sense of self-worth when they look at their history and their heritage and identity.
Well, you say that this hasn't been incorporated into history, but that is changing now, isn't it? Because the Education Department has adopted your book as part of the history curriculum.
Yes, indeed, sir. I feel quite honored that they've done that. It wasn't an easy ride. In fact, I didn't write the books for those purposes. Mm. Somebody picked it up and said, wow, can we utilize this as a pilot in the history curriculum of high school learners? I said, look, I wrote the book as an instrument of healing and restoration, not as a corrective to our historical narrative. But sure, go ahead. And they then wrote a technical report as to where the book is appropriate in the history curriculum, submitted to the minister, and that's how it got endorsed eventually. Yes, so yeah, it's to be incorporated into the history curriculum of high school learners in the Western Cape, yeah.
Now, unfortunately, I haven't read your book, because this interview only came to my attention a couple of days ago, but I would love to
naughty,
do so.
Naughty, naughty, naughty.
No, I just would like to ask where I can get my hands on a copy and where listeners can get their hands on a copy.
Yeah. Look, I'm a terrible marketing person, so I don't even know how to answer that other than give me a call, I'll tell you where to find it. and it's in my garage. No, so there were two approaches to the marketing. The one was initially, we used an outlet like Exclusive Books. So, for example, I saw it on the rack in Cavendish. And then I employed a number of what I call township distributors as an incentive. Instead of selling drugs, you can sell books, you know. Instead of selling Cook Sisters, you can sell books. Well, that didn't go too well, but that was the idea. And so you'll find the odd person with a stash of books in an environment where they're trying to sell literacy and books rather than other commodities. Mm. But in terms of mainstream access, yeah, just drop me a note. I've got a distributor that's sitting somewhere in Stellenbosch and one in Johannesburg and so on and so on. So, yeah.
If you've just joined the conversation, I am talking to Dr. Reuben Richards, author, leader, founder of an NGO, and so many other things. Reuben, I'd love to talk more about your book, but I'm nervous that we're going to run out of time. We should schedule an interview for a whole day, because there's so much ground to cover when it comes to you. You do have your own foundation, the Reuben Richards Foundation. Tell us a little bit about that.
The foundation was established in 2012 at the instance of me being called into a township on the Cape Flats to negotiate between rival gangs, the police, the community, and the military. I have a set of skills that enables me to do that, kind of work for the UN and elsewhere in the world. And so I agreed. Reluctantly to do it. And then a friend of mine said to me, man, this work that you're doing, why don't you register an NGO? I said, do I look like an NGO to you? I just come out of being the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce, you know. I mean, do I even look like an NGO? So anyway, I took his advice and registered an entity. And then I thought, what do I call it? And I have such a diverse background that my wife said, you can't have all your friends in the same room, because they're not going to know what to talk to each other about. So you've got your sort of high-flying professorial academics to your low-lying factory workers. I said, anyway, so they all know who Reuben Richards is. So, okay, let's just call it the Reuben Richards Foundation. And then I got accused of being a narcissistic and all sorts of other wonderful things. I said, man, I don't know, man. People just know who Reuben is, and that's it. So that's how we got to the name. The foundation itself is a public benefit organization, and so our focus is on facilitating the healing of trauma in communities that are at the behest of violence and dysfunction. So we've worked with pregnant teenagers, excuse me, my voice is croaky this time of the morning. So we worked with pregnant teenagers at schools, juvenile boys, gang leaders, and so forth. And more recently, I've just written a curriculum for gender-based violence interventions for men, and I've piloted that on my farm here. And as a result, the Western Cape government's Department of Social Development has asked me to train all their social workers in my curriculum on masculinity.
Wow. And
it's called Masculinity Conversations About Gender Equality. So that's what's happening right now. Wow. And that gives you some idea of what the foundation does, yeah.
Sure, you're a busy man, Ruben. I don't know how you fit it all in, but I suppose somebody that's got 4 degrees is very good at multitasking.
Well, we all have 24 hours, you know, and sleep is optional. So what can I say?
I'll just take a break from the conversation to let you know that you might not be good at marketing your book, but Andre on the WhatsApp line is good at marketing your book. He says you can find it at Surplus. Oh, somebody's just clicked away from the message. Surplus Radical Bookshop, 302 Albert Road in Woodstock. So there you go. Okay. If you, like me, are looking for Ruben's book, it's Surplus Radical Bookshop on Albert Road in Woodstock. Thanks, Andre, for letting us know about that. Ruben, I really want you to tell us more about the executive leadership program you do, where you take business people out to Robben Island, because I find that absolutely fascinating.
Yes, I'm a boring academic at one level, so I think up all these curriculums, right?
I developed your words, not mine.
So I developed a 3-day immersion program for global leaders. That's the focus, or high level executive leaders, on Robben Island. And so I've partnered with the Robben Island Museum, got their permission and collaboration to do it. And what it entails is taking about 50 leaders, no more than that, otherwise it becomes unmanageable, for 3 days to overnight on the island. And we follow the footsteps of a political prisoner. And it's an immersion program, so you get handcuffed, you get dressed in prison clothing, you get stripped of your belongings, et cetera, et cetera. So a simulated experience. And the conceptual framework and the role model that we've tried and understand is a former prisoner of the island, whose name is not well known in South Africa yet, but he's the only prisoner who successfully escaped from the island on 2 occasions. And on the 3rd occasion was then banished because he was such a danger to South African society. Wow. And who might that be? A young man from the Eastern Cape called David, as it's pronounced in Afrikaans, David Stuurman. I said, who the heck is David Stuurman? I've never heard of this person. Well, fortunately, this past year, the South African government acknowledged that David Stuurman exists, and so they renamed the Port Elizabeth Airport after David Stuurman, to give you some idea.
Fascinating.
So we base it on the life of David Stuurman. I have his descendants on the course, and so you can hear from them firsthand about their great-great-great-grandfather. But here's the tragedy. You will not find this narrative in the history books of South Africa. It's like, wow, that's crazy. And so that's what we do with the leaders. We expose them not only to the historical past, but also its present. And David Stuurman, being a Khoisan leader, necessitates a discussion around indigenous history. And that's what the program is. It's an exciting one. And then COVID, of course, put an end to it in the short term. So as soon as COVID has decided to move on, we will reactivate it. But that's, in short, the program. And you'll find a video about that on YouTube or somewhere, on link to my website.
It sounds completely, completely fascinating to me. I know one former global leader that you should take to your immersion program and never let come back with the initials
really?
Jay-Z.
I know a few. We won't mention names. But yeah.
If you're just joining us, I am talking to Dr. Reuben Richards, author, NGO founder, and so much more. I'd like an umbrella term for you. How can I refer to you in just one or two words, Reuben? Because there's just so much.
I'm from the Cape Flats. So there's one word, malachi.
He's so down to earth. That's one thing he certainly is. Reuben, before we run out of time, let's talk about your recent move into politics.
My move into politics? I don't know about that. What are you talking about, man? I'm just competing for the mayoral position in Cedarburg. That's not politics. That's just, you know.
Mayor today, president tomorrow, Reuben.
I don't know. But in short, I recently, 2 years ago, moved into the Cedarburg region. This is where I'm farming at the moment. My family's here. We've all moved here. And, I facilitated some historic meetings between the business community, NGOs, and the municipality. Which is consistent with what I do as a foundation. And then people said, man, have you thought about running for office? I said, I never think about things like that. And long story short, a group of concerned residents came together and said, listen, we will want to support you. Put something together for us. And so we put something together that is called Cedarburg First, which is a residents association. And as a residents association, we are contesting the local elections because we have a slogan that says, you know, it's an Afrikaans environment here, so everything happens in Afrikaans. So ons is inwoners, but inwoners din. We are residents who serve residents. That's who we are. The interests of the residents come first, not the ideology of a political party. The interests of the residents come first. And it's quite fascinating to see how that has unlocked people's interest and positive energy. Because suddenly you're talking about things that make sense to people. I mean, that's what politics is all about. I think it should be.
But Reuben, let's get to the why, because you certainly don't need this extra admin in your life. You have done so much and achieved so much. Why do you feel like you need to contest an election in that area when there are already so many other people trying to do it?
Yeah, I should employ you as my advisor. That is the question I ask. Why? You know, if I were to say, let me answer it to you this way. My running partner is the managing director of Rooibos Limited, South Africa.
Ooh.
You know.
You've got nice friends.
Yeah. So I said to him, his name is Martin. I said, Martin, why are you doing this? I mean, you know. Anyway, so the two of us, at the behest of this organization, our message to people is the following. I said, listen, neither of us need this job, okay? we don't need this job. But what we do need is to ensure that our municipality functions properly.
Mm.
Because we are investors in the region, we are business owners, we are major employers in the region, and we are farmers. Now, as farmers, you cannot farm with polluted water. Let's just give you a simple example. And right now, as we speak, the threat of pollution into the river and the source of our water, which we use for irrigation for our farms, that risk is enormously high. So that's, I suppose, one of the big whys. Somebody was driving this bus. I said to a group yesterday, see, I bought a ticket, and I live in this thing called the Cedarburg. It's like a bus, you know, I bought a ticket. But this bus seems to be swaying from left to right, and I have a suspicion that the driver of the bus has had one too many, you know. So I got one of two choices, you know. Either just get off the bus, which I'm not planning to do in a hurry, or just take over the driving of the bus. You know?
Just take over the driving. Well, could you not take over the driving of the very, very big bus, listen, as in the country?
I only have a code one license, okay? So I just drive small cars.
But seriously, Reuben, in the grander scheme of things, any ambition to take the political career even bigger?
No. Listen, I said to people, I just want to boer, we call it. I just want to farm and write my books. I've just finished another book, so please, you know, that's what I want to do. But yeah, who knows how life turns out.
And before we let you go, are you lighting the fire just now for your braai?
I don't braai on Heritage Day. You know, I eat. yes, we will.
Ruben, it's been such a delight talking to you. I can't thank you enough for joining us. He's a farmer, an author, the chairman of the Ruben Richards Foundation, and self-proclaimed Mulachi, Dr. Ruben Richards. Thanks so much for joining us today.
All right. Have a wonderful day.
You bye-bye. Too, and all the best in that election. Jeepers, I really hope he will run for president one day. He certainly got my vote. And I want to put my hand up to write his book, because what fascinating stories that man has to tell.